We all have challenges with software development when it comes to dealing with existing code. Rarely do we have the opportunity that we come to work every single day and we start with file new project. In fact, most of our time is spent dealing with code that already exists, either written by us or other people. My name is Doug Seven, and I'm a senior product manager with Visual Studio. And what I want to talk about in this hour is how we can overcome those challenges in dealing with existing code, and also how we can use some of the tools that are in Visual Studio 2010 to help ensure architectural integrity and communicate the intent of our design as we move into implementation. The challenges we face on a day-to-day basis are immense. We all have massive amounts of code complexity we're dealing with, and it can be difficult to understand. In some cases, we might have even looked at the code yesterday, a week ago, a month ago, maybe even a year ago, and in all of these cases, it can still be challenging to understand. Maintaining code and the quality of the software that we're developing is of utmost importance and also one of the hardest things we do on a day-to-day basis. What we really need are tools that are going to help us do this. As we work on our designs or work on the code, how do we know that the code that we're building is meeting the intent of the design? Are we building the right system? What will break when we start adding code? You know, things like adding a little bit of code in one place or editing some existing code. What are the downstream effects of that? What's going to happen when we roll that into production? One of the challenges we face all the time is, does the implementation that we're creating match the design? How do we know that we're meeting these requirements? Now, oftentimes we find out too late. We find out when we go into production that something doesn't work, or that the reusability pattern that we thought we were building is not in fact what we built. With Visual Studio 2010, we want to help you make sure that you can understand the existing code you have, which could be a handful of small projects, or in many cases, very large projects. You can imagine, for those of us who have worked on Visual Studio, we have 50 million lines of code that we're maintaining, and some of that code dates back 10, 20 years. We face these challenges just as much as anybody else does. How do we do it? How do we overcome these challenges? How do we understand our existing code base so that we can make modifications to it? Secondly, we want to look at how we're going to ensure architectural integrity. As we move forward to implementing new designs and adding code to our code base, how do we ensure that the integrity of our architecture is in place and that we're not violating some constraint or breaking some rule that is part of that design? And then finally, as we go forward with new implementations and new designs, how do we communicate our intent? How do we communicate to the people who will be doing the work what the intention is and what our design is supposed to do? Those are the things we're going to look at in the next hour. When we think about how existing code works, you can think about yourself as sort of an explorer. When you have to go work on a project, imagine you're a new developer to an organization or a new developer on a project. Oftentimes we allow these developers who are new to our projects, a few days, sometimes even a few weeks, to learn the project, to become an explorer, to look at the code, to understand the code, look at the design documentation, read the technical specifications. And the problem is that these things, documents and designs, these are sort of like maps and documents. They only tell part of the story. The real truth is in the code. What the code does may not match what the intent or the design was, and that can be a challenge for anybody new to a project and how you come up to speed on the project. In fact, you might have been on the project for some considerable amount of time, but you're working on a new piece of it, some part of it you've never worked on before. Reading the design documentation and the technical documentation will tell you only so much. What you really have to do is look at the code to understand it. Now, that itself can be difficult, this sort of understanding the truth of the code. You can spend hours or even days, possibly even weeks, reading through code, chasing call dependencies, just try to understand what the code does and what all of its dependencies are. What happens when you start changing code? What are the downstream effects of any change you make? With Visual Studio 2010, we want to introduce dynamic interactive visualization tools, as well as things like UML, that can help you both understand the code that you're working with and communicate the intent of what you want done. So if you think about the idea of reading code to understand what the code does, now flip that and look at pictures that describe what the code does. Look at diagrams, look at models, look at maps of what the code does. Same is true for communicating design. Instead of trying to describe the function, we have started to leverage tools like UML. Sequence diagrams are a common artifact of any technical documentation. This is what the call flow should look like, what the control flow should look like. And then finally, this idea of diagramming the sort of logical architecture of your application. we all work in environments where there's, you know, a diagram on a whiteboard and somebody's written up in the corner, do not erase. Right? And this is the de facto description of your logical architecture. So how do we move that into our development environments and make it a real true artifact that we can work with and leverage? And these are the tools that we've built in Visual Studio 2010 that will help you better understand your code and better communicate what you're doing. First off, in code visualization, we have some new tools with DGML, or Directed Graph Markup Language, that will help you take your code and create a visualization of it, a sort of map of what the code looks like, and most importantly, what the dependencies are between different artifacts within your code. And you're able to do this in a variety of different ways, either creating visualizations of sort of artifacts, the output of your projects, the DLLs, the EXEs of your projects, or looking at it more logically by namespace. In fact, we have a model generation tool that will create a dependency graph, and you can look at those dependencies in a variety of ways, by assembly, by namespace, by class. These are all just different perspectives of the same thing. You know, each of these cases, you're dealing with your existing code base, but you're able to look at it from a different lens or a different perspective. So for instance, I might look at my code by assembly to understand how the different assemblies relate to each other, which is more physical in nature, the actual binaries that are output, versus by namespace, which is much more logical in nature, and I can understand how my namespaces exist. In either case, whatever perspective I use, this is going to help me better understand the code and how the code interacts with one another, how the different artifacts work together. These interactive graphs that are output allow me to sort of explore and navigate through my code in a much more visual way. This, by the way, is a much more natural way of looking at code than reading through lines and lines of code. You can imagine, you've probably been through this process before where you're reading hundreds and hundreds of lines of code, and you're chasing one call to the next call to the next call, and you're really trying to wrap your head around what's happening. And this can be immensely challenging, just to wrap your head around some of these call stacks. Very difficult. Now, if you can look at that, see it visually, see it as a picture, and understand what those dependencies are, this could really accelerate your understanding of a system much faster. So let's take a look at the architectural exploration tools that we've built into Visual Studio 2010 Ultimate that are going to help you better understand your code much faster. So here we have Visual Studio 2010, and I have a solution already open. This is our Blue Yonder Airline solution. Now, you can imagine if I was a new developer coming to work on this project, I'd want a way to quickly understand it. So again, I could read all the technical documentation, but it's much more interesting to look at pictures. So I can come up here to my architecture tab, and I want to generate a dependency graph. In this case, I'm going to do it by assembly. I want to understand how the physical artifacts of my solution work together. Now I can go into each of the, I'll be able to drill into each of those artifacts to understand what's happening within them, but my primary perspective is sort of physical, by assembly. Now you can see here it's running a visualization of the dependencies and processing them, and the output is this diagram. Now I'm going to collapse my solution explorer so I have a little bit more real estate to work with. And then what I see here is just some indication of what happens within my code in terms of the assembly connections. We go ahead and zoom in, and you can see here I've just got, this is a WPF based surface, so I have the ability to do things like zoom in, zoom out, scroll around. I can see here I've got a Blue Yonder feedback DLL. It connects to a generics block. Now the generics are things in our code that are actually artifacts from the .NET framework, the various generics we might use within our code, but we don't want to represent some sort of dependency from the .NET framework to our application, so we collapse those things into a generics node. Additionally, if I scroll down, I'll see that there's also an externals node, and the externals node is designed to isolate all of the code that we have a dependency on that is not part of our application. So this is things that we're dependent upon in the .NET framework, for example. So we want to isolate that and show it in a different way. As I look at these artifacts, you'll notice all the various lines that sort of light up as I click from one element to the next. These lines indicate dependencies from one block to another. In this case, I'm looking at dependencies from one assembly to another. And as I look at these things, I can better understand how they're connected. The thicker the line, the more coupling that's occurring. The thinner the line, the less coupling occurring. So here I can see in Blue Yonder Flight Manager EXE, there's a very thin line to my Blue Yonder Flight Manager lib.dll. So there's just a small amount of coupling occurring there versus a much larger amount of coupling here between Flight Manager EXE and the externals namespace, or the externals block, I should say. So as I look at this code, I can sort of better understand what's happening. As I put my mouse over any one of the blocks, I get a sort of pop-up dialog that tells me a lot about what's happening within that. So here I can see this is an assembly. It's a DLL called blueyonder.feedback, and it tells me a lot about it. The same is true with these coupling lines. As I mouse over them, I get information about sort of what the connection is between this block, the Blue Yonder feedback block, for instance, and the blocks that it's calling. So in this case, it's calling quite a few. And I can use this navigation tool to kind of move myself through the code and see where the connections are being made. So in this case, that was a connection down to externals, and now I'm connected to externals. So as I navigate through this, I can really start to understand my code a lot better. I can do things like, for instance, my generics. I'm going to highlight that. And I actually don't want to have my generics isolated out like this. In this case, I want to incorporate them into my diagram in a different way. So I'm going to go ahead and hit delete and delete the generics node. And now it changes my graph. I'm going to go ahead and show the graph in its total. And now I can see my graph has a different layout. The generics have been excluded, but my externals are still there. And I've also got this one assembly sort of hanging out in the middle of nowhere with no connection to anything. Let's take a quick look at that. So I'll zoom into that. And in this case, this is just an .exe file. This is a setup project that we have. It is just a helper tool that will help us set up our project. It's not really relevant to what we're doing here in sort of understanding this code, so I can delete that as well. And what this is doing is it's allowing me to sort of work more interactively with this graph and do things that are more interesting. So if I zoom in, for instance, to my externals, I might want to look at my externals and better understand what's happening there. So I can expand that out. And when I expand that out, my graph just sort of gets really large. There's a lot of externals that I'm working with. As you look across this graph, you can see I've got a handful of assemblies that are part of my project, and then a lot of things that are part of the externals. And what's interesting, as I look at this, I can mouse over some of these blocks and see things like, for instance, this is an mscorelib.dll. If I come over here and mouse over this, I can see there's another mscorelib.dll. And as I come down here and mouse over this, I can see there's even a third mscorelib.dll. In fact, if I zoom in on any one of these, you can see, sure enough, it's an mscorelib.dll. The reason for that is multi-targeting. We've built the solution in a way that we are able to target multiple versions of the .NET framework. So as a result, the dependency exists where in each of these places we're connecting to different versions of mscorelib.dll. So this really helps me to understand what's happening within my code and really understand what, you know, what I need to be worried about. So let's go ahead and zoom into that. And I'm going to come over here and just collapse the externals. Now I'm able to do a number of things with all of this. For instance, I can zoom back out. I can understand my code a little bit better. I have a legend over here, so I can do things like add elements to my legend. For instance, I might want to add an isExternal property. That'll add a new property, and I can choose how I want to color things that are external. So for instance, I might want to say if it is in fact external, make it bright red, and go ahead and do that. And as I expand through and look at things, I'll find all kinds of indications of what assemblies are external. So if I do have a dependency to an external assembly, but I want to know how it, I want to know where it is, I want to see it better, I can do things like color code it by property. So all of the assemblies, all of the artifacts, I should say, within my diagram have properties, and they reveal information about the assemblies that I can use in my tool. Now, I'm also able to use different views. Let me come out here and show the entire thing. For instance, if I'm looking at one of my assemblies, so let's look at, let's pick a good one, like Mile Tracker. I can do things like change the perspective. So in this case, I'm going to go to a left-to-right diagram type, and I can see how all the different things connect. I can even go to something called a butterfly diagram, where it'll show me sort of the connections one node out. So in this case, Mile Tracker only connects to these assemblies one node out. And I can follow that, and I can chase down the different dependencies and how they work and what they do. So I have a lot of tooling here that allows me to get different perspectives on my code in a visual way that is much easier and more intuitive than reading through code and understanding code. This will really help me accelerate my learning. I even have tools to create dependency matrix views. So if the sort of diagram graph type view isn't right for me, I can create a dependency matrix, and it'll show me how all of my namespaces are connected. Let me zoom in on this. So here I can see all of my namespaces across one side and all of the objects in there across the other, and I get a cross section that tells me when there is a dependency between the two. and I can look at that and understand how that works better. Now, all of these things are DGML files, which means that they're simply files that I can save. I can incorporate them into my version control system, so I can have before and after perspectives, for example, or historical records, or if I need it for compliance, I have some diagrams I can use for compliance to better understand how all of my things, my assets, my artifacts work together. So what we just saw was how we can use tools like architectural exploration, things like the DGML diagrams, and underlying there's something called an architecture explorer that allows us to pivot on how we look at our software, how we create the visualizations that we use to better understand the dependencies and understand how the code works together. This is really useful, but ultimately we need to start doing some work on this code. Once we understand the code, we need to start doing some things with it. And the challenge with that is, over time, as we work on code bases, as we add code, as we change code, we fix bugs, there seems to be this sort of drift that occurs. When you add code or change dependencies, over time your code sort of drifts away from its original intent, its original design. This is the challenge that most of us, in fact, face on a day-to-day basis. It's not that the documentation that we have is wrong or that the technical specs we have is wrong. It's that over time the code has drifted away from the original intent. This is easy to have happen, happens to all of us. What we need is better tools to help prevent this from happening going forward. Okay? So as we think about this, we have to think about, you know, we create these diagrams, we create these whiteboard descriptions of what our intent is, and what we want to know is, does the implementation match the design? Does the output that we created match the plan that we started with? Can we pass some sort of architectural validation? You can imagine if we could take that whiteboard diagram or that Visio diagram and compare it to our implementation to find out if, in fact, what code we wrote matches the code we had intended to write. A layer diagram is the tool that we've incorporated into Visual Studio 2010 that enables this. A layer diagram is, in effect, nothing more than just that whiteboard diagram that you created with some better tooling added to it, so that you can incorporate it into the lifecycle and use it for two different purposes. One, for communicating the intent. So this is what you want to have designed. You want the architecture to look like this. And then the other is to validate against that architecture. Did you, in fact, implement the architecture that we were intending to have? So you can visualize and you can validate. And that's the most important part of the layer diagram. So let's take a look at how we can create a layer diagram from some existing code, use it to better understand what the dependencies are between the different logical or physical layers within our application, and then how we can use that to validate code as we move forward. All right, so here we are in our Visual Studio environment, and we have the project that we were working on, our Blue Yonder project. And in this case, what we want to do is create a new layer diagram to help us better understand some of the artifacts in our code and how they relate, and also create some rules that we can validate against later on. So I'm going to start with my architecture tab, and I'm going to create a new diagram. And in this case, what I want to create is a new layer diagram. So I'll go ahead and click OK. And the first thing it's going to ask me is to create a new modeling project. I haven't created a modeling project yet, and the layer diagram is part of the modeling project. In this case, I'm going to go ahead and accept the defaults. It'll be called Modeling Project 1. And give it a second while it goes through and creates that project. Now, once the project's created, it'll give me my new Layer Diagram 1 document, and I can start creating a new layer diagram from this. Now, I have a couple of ways I can do this. I'm going to go ahead and start with my Solution Explorer. I'll go ahead and pin that open. And over here on my Toolbox. And I'll pin that open. These are the two things I'm going to use to create my layer diagram. First, I want to describe the layers that I'm going to create. So I'm going to add four layers to my diagram. So now I've got four layers added, and I'm going to just rename them very quickly. So I'm going to come to my Properties tab, and I'll pin that open real quick. And the first layer we're just going to call UX. The second layer we're going to call Logic. The third layer we're going to call Services. And the lower layer we're going to call Data. And that'll be our data layer. So now we've got four layers. There's no connection between those layers yet, but we'll get to that. And then what I want to do quickly is associate some of my artifacts with the different layers. So if you think about the output of a project, the output of a project is either a DLL or an EXE. So I'm going to associate those physical artifacts with different layers. So I'm going to start with our Flight Manager. And that is part of our user experience layer, our UX layer. You notice as I drag that project onto the layer, the number appears in the corner indicating how many artifacts are associated with that layer. I'm going to continue doing this. I'll add my web project, and that'll increment the artifact number to 2. And then for my logic layer, we're going to take a couple things and put it on my logic layer. And we'll do the same with services. We'll add our workflow services there. And finally, we have a database project, and we're going to add our database project to the data layer. So now we've added some physical artifacts to our diagram, and I can move these things around however I need to. But I also want to add some logical artifacts to this diagram. So in this case, I'm going to come up here in View, and I'm going to open up my Architecture Explorer. Now, the Architecture Explorer allows me to identify artifacts of my project in a variety of ways. So here I see I'm going to start with a class view, which is more of a logical view. And in my class view, I'm going to look for a couple of things. First, I'm going to look for my Blue Yonder Logic class. And it's a namespace, actually, I should say, and it's got some classes in it. So I'm going to take that namespace and I'm going to drag it up to the logic layer. And you can see it's got one namespace that I've got a hold of, and I'm going to drop it on my logic layer. Now I have 3 items associated with the logic layer. And I'm also going to grab my data services project, namespace, and we'll put it up there as well. So now I've got a handful of things associated with that. And I could keep using the Architecture Explorer to look at different things if I wanted to. I could associate an individual class with one of these various layers. So I have a lot of flexibility in how I can create this diagram and associate things with it. So now I've got my 4 objects. I'm going to open up my toolbox again. And the next thing I want to do is define sort of how these different boxes are connected. What's the relationship between them? So I'm going to do that by defining dependencies. For instance, UX has a dependency on services. Maybe logic has a dependency on services as well. Services has a dependency on data. And so I kind of define these relationships, if you will. And so you think about how these arrows work. The intent of an arrow is to indicate that this is a permissible relationship. So things in the UX class are allowed to talk to things in the services class, or layer, I should say, I'm sorry. But things in the UX layer are not allowed to talk to things in the data layer directly. They have to go through the services layer if they want to talk to the data layer. Same is true for logic. Logic can talk to services, but it can't talk directly to data. Now, what I want to do is, this is sort of my intent, right? This is, I've described sort of these layers and what I intend, or how I intend them to connect with one another, but I haven't validated that that is in fact the case. If I right-click on here and say Generate Dependencies, what I can do is, what this will do is tell it to look at the code I've assigned to these layers and figure out what the dependencies are that currently exist. So are there dependencies I'm not aware of that already exist within the code? So by generating dependencies, we're actually reflecting over the code and looking at where the connections are and generating these dependencies. This can be tremendously helpful in making sure that you understand how your code is working. We actually had one of our project teams within Visual Studio use this tool, and as a result, they were able to uncover a dependency that they were unaware of within their own code that would have prevented them from shipping. So by using the tool, they were able to discover a dependency that had gotten into their code that they weren't aware of. In our case, here we see that we have a dependency between the UX layer and the logic layer, as described by this arrow. That's a dependency we didn't know we had, but now we do, and if it's okay, we'll go ahead and leave it there. Now, the next thing we can do is right-click on the design surface and choose Validate Architecture. Now, Validate Architecture works in a similar way. It parses over all the code, reflects over all the code, and looks for dependencies that aren't permissible by the design of the application. You can see here our validation succeeded. Of course, we just generated dependencies, so of course everything was well known at that point in time. But this validation exercise can be used to validate code as you start building on it. As you start adding code to the various projects, you can use the validation to make sure that your code isn't drifting away from your design. So for example, if we took our mile tracker application and added it to the UX layer, and then we did another validation, in this case what we're going to see is a validation error. We have a dependency that we haven't allowed. The rules here are based on where arrows exist. Wherever an arrow exists, a dependency is allowed. Wherever there's not an error, that dependency is not allowed. So in this case, we see we've got 4 different errors where we have our mile tracker talking to some dependency that it's not allowed to talk to. So this is a great way to discover some dependencies and then go on to fix those problems later on. So the layer tracker really helps you better understand this. And you can use these diagrams to create much more complex things. For instance, you can take a layer and put it inside of a layer. You can use the properties to make it a little bit more readable. For instance, I might want to change its color and make that more readable, so I can start to build out much more intricate layers and understand better. So whatever diagram I've created on my whiteboard, I can now create here in code. Now the other thing that's interesting about this is I can use this as part of my validation, both locally, like we just saw where I did some validation, but I can also use it as validation in my build process. So for instance, if I come over here to my modeling project, and I'm just go ahead and click on the properties for the modeling project, you notice there's a property called Validate Architecture. This will allow me to create a rule around validation that every time my project builds, it goes through a validation of the architecture, much like what I just did when I clicked right-clicked and chose Validate Architecture here. By deciding to validate architecture in this way, it will always validate architecture whenever I build my project. That's great locally, but we might also want to include architecture validation as part of our build process. So in this case, I'm going to come over to my Team Explorer and look at my builds. I've already got a Blue Yonder Airlines build. So I'm going to choose to edit my build definition, and I'll close my toolbox. And I can skip down to the Processes node and into the Advanced settings. And in the Advanced settings, there's an option for MS Build Arguments. And here, I can add an argument for Validate Architecture and set that to True. And now, whenever this build process runs, it'll validate the architecture against that diagram. So I can go ahead and save that. And before I do any validation, I have to check in my changes. Go ahead and do a check-in. Save all of those things. And we'll check the code in. And now, if I want to run I'll run my build, and it will do an architecture validation for me. So I'll queue a new build, and off it goes. Now we're not going to wait for it to complete. We can come back and look at it later. But in this case, what it's going to do is run through all the build steps of my build definition. And when it gets to that argument for validate architecture, that argument is set to true. So it'll use that layer diagram then to validate the architecture against that layer diagram. In our case, we already know we have 4 errors. So we should see the build fail, or at least partially succeed, indicating that while it compiled, it didn't pass the build, the validate architecture rules. So in this case, we saw that we were able to use a layer diagram to create both in our case, a physical and logical representation of our code. We used the layers to match physical output, DLLs and EXEs, to different layers within our application, and also some logical artifacts, namespaces, that we associated with different layers as well. We created rules for validating architecture by explicitly defining the dependencies between the layers and what layers were allowed to connect to each other and what layers were not, and then we were able to validate our code against that definition. This is really powerful in helping us to maintain architectural integrity. By having this layer validation as part of our build process, we can make sure that our code is always being built in a way that it's reusable and it meets the design that we tried to implement in the beginning. Now as we go forward working on our projects, the sort of next thing we're going to want to do is communicate the intent of new designs that we create. So as we start building out our project, we're going to create new requirements, and those new requirements are going to require some sort of technical implementation, and we need to communicate to one another what we expect that technical implementation to be based on a design. If you think about how you communicate intent, you create a design, you create either requirement and the design that is intended to fulfill that requirement. You have to communicate that to whoever's doing the implementation to make sure they understand the intent of what you set forth to do. Part of this might be about reusability or compliance reasons or separation of intent. There's lots of reasons why you need to communicate all of your design intent. The layer diagram will help you do some of that. But UML is a great tool for helping you communicate this intent. In Visual Studio 2010, we've implemented 5 of the 13 UML diagram types. Then you can use these as part of your workflow in communicating what you're trying to do. So in this case, we have UML designers for activity diagrams, class diagrams, component diagrams, sequence diagrams, and use case diagrams. These are all part of a new modeling project, which you saw me create with the layer diagram. And I can associate work items with all of these diagram types. So this allows me to, if you can imagine, create a requirement, associate, for instance, a use case to that requirement, and now all of that information is collected together as part of the work item, and that's used to communicate between the two people who are designing and doing the implementation of the design. So let's take a look at how we can create use cases and sequence diagrams. So here we are back in our build environment. We see the previous build failed as we expected it to. We're not going to concern ourselves with that right now. What we do want to do is create some new tools. So I'm going to come in here, and as part of my modeling project, I'm going to add a new diagram type. And you can see I've got all these various UML types that I can add. For the purposes of demonstration, I'm going to add a new use case diagram. I'll go ahead and add that. And now what we're working on is a design surface that enables us to create a UML 2.1 compliant diagram. So as I open up my toolbox, I can see all the various artifacts that would be associated with the use case. For instance, I can have an actor. I can have a use case as part of this diagram type. I can create an association between the two. And I can define things within these. So for instance, my actor might be a web user. And the use case might be maybe it's shop for vacation packages. Helps if I spell it right. Don't want errors in our UML. So I'm going to shop for vacation packages. In this case, a web user is going to come online and shop for vacation packages. And you can imagine I could create a much more interesting diagram of all the various things a web user might do. One of the nice things is I can associate this to a work item. So for instance, if I want to create a new user story, in this case, we're dealing with the Agile process template. So a user story is a common artifact in the Agile process template. You can see we've got sort of a template here that says, you know, as a user, I want to do something. So as a web user, I want to use the blueyonder.com website to shop for vacation packages. This is a great user story. I can associate some other things with it, but most importantly, I can save that work item. I'm going to go ahead and close it. And when I come back to my use case, I can see that there's a little glyph next to this use case, shop for vacation packages, that indicates that there's a work item associated with this use case. If I right-click on the use case, I can come down here and I can view related work items. Sure enough, shop for vacation packages is that related work item. So that really helps me better understand what's happening here. So I can create a much more interesting UML diagram and show all the different use cases that a web user might be part of, or show other actors and how they would integrate with these various use cases, associate the necessary work items with those artifacts, and that now becomes part of the documentation. So in this case, I've got a user story, and it's associated with a use case, and that becomes part of the documentation that is passed around as somebody goes to implement this use case. So that's pretty interesting. The other thing I can do is I can create, let's go ahead and create a new, add a new item. And we can create things like a sequence diagram, for example. Now here in the sequence diagram, same thing, if I want to create a technical specification, I can add lifelines to my diagram and lay it out as I need to. Within my lifeline, I can add synchronous calls. So I might have a call that comes here. I might have another call that goes from here to here. And so I can start to lay out my sequence in a way that makes sense, and that I can use this as a way to communicate with others. So this is a really great tool. What's really helpful too is to be able to take some existing code and reverse engineer a sequence diagram out of it. So for instance, if I look in my workflow services, so here I'm going to go into my Solution Explorer, and I'm going to expand my Flight Manager, and I'm going to look for a flight rebooking class. In this case, here's a flight rebooking class that's part of my project. And what I can see here is I've got some pretty complicated code. This can be really hard to sort of read through and understand. And again, part of what we want to do is make the process of understanding existing code easier. We want to accelerate your ability to understand existing code. So rather than having to read through all this code and understand what it does, I can right-click on the surface and choose to generate a sequence diagram. And then from there, I can make some decisions about how deep I want to call and what the boundaries of my sequence diagram are. I'll accept the defaults. And like the other tools, it does a quick sort of parse over the code, reflects the code, does some analysis, and then it generates the sequence diagram. Now here I can see the sequence diagram with all the various lifelines on it. As I look through the code, I can see some information like deferred calls. As I navigate through here, I can see all kinds of information about how this code works. This will really help me understand the code in a much more accelerated manner rather than having to try to read the code and understand what it does. So I can see where the lifelines terminate for each of these things and understand sort of the complexity of the code. This is really helpful for me, and ultimately I can see here some link code that's being called. This is really helpful for me in terms of accelerating my ability to understand the code and what the code is doing. In this case, we saw that in Visual Studio 2010, we support 5 of the 13 UML diagram types. They are UML 2.1 compliant. And we also have the ability to reverse engineer things like a sequence diagram to help you better understand your existing code. So being able to do things like create use cases and activity diagrams as a way to communicate your intent, and sequence diagrams as well, but also the ability to reverse engineer a sequence diagram so that you can help to better understand your code. When we created these architectural tools, this was a big area of investment for us for Visual Studio 2010. And really, our objective was in dealing with existing code bases. There are great tools like UML for defining new activities that you want to do, new implementations you want to create. But the biggest challenge we face on a day-to-day basis is the existing code that we work with all the time. So really, these tools are designed to help you better understand your code, manage the complexity, make sure that your architectural integrity is intact, and that your code doesn't drift too far from the original intent. And then using tools like UML to clearly communicate your intent and your design. As with other parts of our product, we do have architectural partners that we work with. These partners are all doing a simultaneous ship with us. In other words, they're coming out within a month or so of Visual Studio 2010. So it's worth looking into these partners if they offer solutions that will help fit your needs. In this presentation, we talked about three things, and these three things are really important in our day-to-day activity. The first of those is understanding the existing code. Like I've said, this is one of the biggest challenges we all face on a day-to-day basis. Rarely do we get the opportunity to come into work in the morning and start with file new project. Most of the time, we start with going into our version control system and looking at some existing code that we have to work with and modify. This can be a daunting and challenging task. As we do make those modifications and as we add new code and as we fix bugs, we want to make sure that we're maintaining our architectural integrity and that our code isn't drifting too far from the original design and the original intent. Tools like the layer diagram will help you do that by not only being able to see what your code is doing, but also be able to validate that the new implementation meets the original design intent. And finally, we looked at tools like UML that you can use to help you communicate the intent of your design, so that as you start moving forward on an implementation, you can be assured that everybody who is part of that development process understands the intent of the implementation, whether that's the developer or the tester who has to test that requirement. They understand how it should work. So again, we looked at how you can understand your existing code, how you can validate your implementation, and how you can communicate your intent. These are all great tools that are built into Visual Studio 2010 Ultimate, and we encourage you to go try them out. Thank you.